The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Though the town remains small to this day, by the time the late 1980s rolled around, Granbury, Texas was experiencing a transformation. Perhaps due to the discomfort that some folks felt as Fort Worth was growing and expanding its suburbs, laying waste to much of Tarrant County's rural areas and once abundantly forested landscapes, Granbury and neighboring Hood County had been experiencing a population boom since the 70s. That boom was steady throughout the 1970s and 1980s and continues to this day as growth in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, as it's known, shows no signs of slowing. With any significant growth in population comes more crime, of course, and by the end of the 80s, in 1988 specifically, many crimes in Granbury had doubled since the beginning of the decade. Crimes such as burglaries, thefts, and DWIs, like Granbury's population, were growing steadily. Homicide, though, was still a relatively irregular occurrence. However, in 1988, one of the most brutal murders the town had ever seen took place. A slaying that today, in 2020, the victim's family has spent almost 32 years diligently looking for answers and justice for the victim, 23-year-old Holly Palmer.
That's one of the reasons I keep fighting so hard to get her case solved, is because I don't want to feel like I've let her down, and I do. But in deep inside, I know it wasn't my fault, but, you know, you should have been there, Dolly, or, you know, there's still nothing I could do.
Holly Palmer was born on July 10, 1965, to parents Mary and Bob Palmer at Valley Memorial Hospital in Indio, California. The family didn't stay in California, though, as Dolly, Holly's sister, explained to us.
Oh, our life growing up, we had a rocky childhood. Mom was the glue to everything that kind of kept us all together. My biological father was basically a gypsy. He would run from town to town and leave us. You know, we would be driving down the road and he would just stop and say, "Y'all gotta get out." And we did. And then a little bit later, he would come and find us and back to wherever shack we were living in, or we lived in a bread truck one time. In fact, we lived in a bread truck in Louisiana. He had kind of made it into like a camper. In fact, my mom was pregnant with me at that time, and Holly was already born. Yeah, it was pretty, we had a rocky childhood. We moved constant. Like I said, he was just like some kind of gypsy, and I think he was searching for himself. And I don't know whether or not he ever really found himself, but the girls and I, we were strong together. I mean, we stayed strong together. You know, we were always looking out for each other. And at that time, it was Holly, me, Honey, and Mary. And, you know, we were always listening and wondering what was going to happen next. That took a toll on Holly, I think more than me, because I grew stronger from it, and it made me have to, like, be the fighter for my sisters, and, you know, just want to always protect them.
The lifestyle that Holly's father chose wasn't easy on her or her sisters, and both she and her sister Dolly experienced abuse at the hands of their father. a fact that still haunts their mother's conscience, even though she was unaware at the time that the abuse was taking place. The details of the abuse, of course, are appalling and maddening. Though we aren't going to elaborate on it, the abuse the sisters suffered is, perhaps, relevant to Holly's story. When they finally settled in Granbury, Texas, things eventually began looking up for the family. Holly's parents divorced, and her mother, Mary, remarried a good man, John Hunter, who finally gave the family stability and provided them with a healthy father figure.
More and more we leveled out whenever John Hunter, my mom's husband, when they got married, everything kind of fell into place. We moved from Lake Whitney to Granbury. You know, it was just like we learned how to live and be like normal, live in a normal home. And I'm not going to say it was perfect because it wasn't, but just to live in a normal place and then ultimately learn to have respect for a man, because we didn't have that sort of respect for our biological father. And that's the way I feel. And I know that Holly loved John Hunter, and I know the other sisters did as well. But he instilled in us a lot of that, and with the having respect and doing the right thing and you know, and things like that. So that was good. You know, she was pretty quiet and bouncy, and you know, she's just a typical young girl, and she loved to read, and she loved the Lord, and she loved to read the Bible and go to church and sing and play games.
Holly was thriving in her new environment. She and her family were healing. It required Holly Palmer no effort to make friends. She was charismatic, genuine, and immensely caring, the latter perhaps to a fault. Holly also flourished academically. While attending Granbury High, she was in band, drama club, speech club, choir, the Texas Readers Club, and a member of the National Honor Society. David, a close friend of Holly's through junior high and high school, remembers her as unforgettable, someone whose impact on his life and countless others is still felt to this day and will be felt forever.
When I was in junior high and high school, we were kind of on and off again, kind of, you know, flirtatious with one another, that sort of thing. We got into high school, we were in the drama club together, and we were really good friends. You know, when people always talk about other people, they always say, it's a sweet person, a great disposition, you know. Everybody always speaks good of the person that they speak about. But with Holly, it was 100% true. There wasn't a vicious bone in her body. She was the type of person that would give you her last 10 cents if it meant, you know, something of importance to you. She just had a great heart. I mean, she was just a wonderful person. When you were around her, you just couldn't help but smile and be in a good mood. She was that type of person. No matter what was going on, she had such a loving heart, and she didn't look down on anybody for anything.
Everyone we spoke to, including David, described to us Holly's tremendous faith and the impact it had on her life and the way she treated others.
She was very devoted to her religion and to her family. Her faith just really shone through her. Back then, talking about your religion or your faith at our age was not really something that was commonplace. And she wore it proudly. She was just a light. I would just reference her as that, a light.
Dolly also spoke of her sister's faith and her search for her meaning of life as a young adult after graduating from Granbury High in 1983.
Basically, she was searching for herself and just searching to figure out who she was. And she always told me that she felt lost and she wanted to find her, you know, the man, the perfect one that was going to take her off and love her forever. You know, the man coming in riding on the big white horse.
By 1988, when Holly was 23 years old, her family was strong and included her mother, her stepfather, two stepbrothers, John and Jim, sisters, Dolly, Molly, Mary, Honey, Wynn, and brother Paul. Her family, everyone who knew Holly told us, was immensely important to her. But Holly was also looking for her soulmate. She'd already divorced who she once thought was her knight in shining armor, but it was probably for the best, as it gave Holly the chance to become fiercely independent and build her own life for herself, her way. She'd gotten a job at a local Mexican restaurant, Jose's, in April of that year, but Holly had also begun a couple other ventures to secure her financially and even creatively. With the help of her mother and stepfather, Mary and John Hunter, Holly opened and managed a Greyhound Trailways bus station on Pearl Street in the heart of Granbury. Holly's idea to put a bus station in Granbury was smart and extremely timely, as her close friend David explained.
Holly, you know, had the vision to have that bus terminal there in Granbury. And I thought it would be a perfect idea for her because of the way she was, you know, how friendly she was and how outgoing she was. I know she was very excited about it. Back in those days, like I said, it was going through the growing pains because a lot of new people were moving into town.
The station was functional, though in November of 1988, Holly had been repairing and remodeling the building, which was once a residential home. Holly was converting a section of the house into a living quarters, where she planned to move to from her apartment at the Countryside Apartments, where she lived with her sister, Wynn, and she'd also begun remodeling a section of the building to use as a gift shop, where she'd sell specifically t-shirts she was designing and screen printing. Holly had countless friends. She came in contact with a lot of people between working at Jose's and the bus station. She was free-spirited, and her warm, welcoming smile and undeniable charm drew folks to her. At this time, she'd recently written to her sister Dolly, who had just moved to Waxahachie, telling her that she'd finally met someone who'd been under her nose the whole time. Holly was head over heels, she told her sister, about a co-worker at Jose's she'd been seeing. But she began having doubts that she expressed when Dolly was visiting Granbury for the Thanksgiving holiday.
I only know bits and pieces of her story because I did not live here. You know, I was there at the bus station one day helping Holly. We were painting, and she was painting, and she looked at me and she said, "What does love feel like?" And I looked at her and I said, "Well, Holly, if you're asking me that, you're not in love. There's not an answer. You just know that you love somebody. But if you're doubting something like that, now what's happened? Holly, what's going on? Has he hurt you?" You know, and she just turned her head and she goes, I'm just like, "Has he hurt you?" And she would not look at me. And then my husband was coming up. Holly said, "Shh." And I just said, so anyway, it never came up again. And then that's when, you know, Thanksgiving was coming and we had gone back home, and then that was, you know, and that was pretty much it.
She normally enjoyed the task, but Holly's mother, Mary, didn't feel like cooking for hours and hours that Thanksgiving. That changed, though, after visiting Holly at the bus station the day before the holiday. As Mary waited for her daughter to wrap up with a customer, she overheard their conversation.
"Are you going to have a good Thanksgiving?"
the customer asked Holly.
"Oh, yes. I'm going to my mama's, and I love her cooking," she replied.
The moment she heard her daughter's response, Mary decided she'd cook after all. But Holly didn't make it to Thanksgiving dinner. Dolly, too, expected her sister that day.
It was Thanksgiving, and we were here at the house, and we were waiting on Holly. Everybody was here. We lived in Waxahachie at the time, and I had Kristen, and that was, you know, the first grandbaby out of us girls and everything, and Holly just loved Kristen. Oh, she loved Kristen. And anyway, so I called Holly, and I said, "Hey, when are you coming over?" You know, and, "Oh, I know. I'm going to try to come." She said, "Dolly, I've got to go break this off with her." And that was a boyfriend at the time. And I said, "Well, you know, I mean, okay. I mean, it shouldn't take you that long, really, you know, because you're going to really need some support, basically, when that happens. And she goes, "Well, I don't know, but I just know that I got to do that." And I said, "Okay, well, then we're just going to be waiting for you. And she's like, okay, well, tell everybody I said hello. I said, I will. And then we'll see you later. She goes, I'm going to try. Okay. I said, I love you. I love you, too. Give Kristen hugs for me. And that was the last time I talked to my sister.
Dolly and her then-husband headed back to Waxahachie after the holiday, and she worried the entire drive about her sister's troubles with love. Her mind, however, never contemplated the unthinkable fate Holly would soon meet. Holly Palmer was at the Greyhound station she managed late on the night of Saturday, November 26th, 1988, remodeling the section of the building she planned to use for her t-shirt business. Holly spent much of her free time there repairing, remodeling, or simply enjoying quiet time alone, reading. At Jose's restaurant across town, Dolly's best friend, Tammy, who also knew Holly well, had just finished her shift.
I remember I was working at Jose's, and I would do the deposit at night, so it was late at night, and so a police officer would take me to make the night drops because it was safer that way, and David Blankenship was the officer that would take me a lot, and so he was taking me that day, and I sat down in his police car, and as soon as I sat down in the police car, it came over the radio that blood was spotted at the bus stop, and I said, oh my gosh, Holly. And this was after midnight because, you know, I have to wait for the bus boys and all them to clean. So this was late. This was midnight, one, I don't even know. And he said, get out of my car, get out of my car. And so I had to get out. And I went into the back into the restaurant and I called Mary, Holly's mom. And I said, Mary, where's Holly? And she said, sweetheart, because I woke her up. And she said, sweetheart, I'm sure she's at home in bed. She's okay.
At 1:43 a.m., now the early, cold, and icy morning of Sunday, November 27th, 1988, Hood County Sheriff's officers arrived at the Greyhound bus station after receiving a phone call from Holly's boyfriend. Since his name has never been released, we'll refer to him from this point on as just that, Holly's boyfriend. Upon arrival, law enforcement, both Hood County and Granbury, were shocked at what they'd found. The inside of the bus station looked like the scene of a massacre. Holly's body lay lifeless inside. The scene of the crime was splattered in an exorbitant amount of blood, and police found telltale signs of what happened there. Holly had been bludgeoned on the right side of her face with a hammer, the marks of the hammerhead apparent and visible. She was subsequently dragged into another area of the station where she was struck again, but this time with a concrete cinder block. Holly Palmer was pronounced dead on the scene at 2:05 a.m. As the first responders arrived at the scene of Holly Palmer's slaying, a Greyhound bus was also arriving, coincidentally. The driver was carrying a package to be delivered there. Leland DeBusk, a respected reporter and editor for the newspaper The Hood County News, was awoken by a call at 2:30 a.m. from a friend at the sheriff's office dispatch telling him something terrible had happened at the bus station. Leland dressed and bolted out the door. As he arrived, Holly, covered by a stark white sheet, was being wheeled out on a gurney and loaded into an ambulance.
When someone is brutally murdered like she was, there has to be some emotion in it, Granbury
police officer Bruce Espen commented, adding,
there are a lot of things I can't elaborate on, but this wasn't a one-time shot with a handgun. This was a hands-on physical killing.
Signs of a struggle were everywhere, and since nothing appeared at the time to have been missing and there were no signs of forced entry, Espen's early assertion that Holly's murder was a crime of passion wasn't simply a haphazard guess. Robbery didn't seem to be the motive, and there were no signs that Holly was sexually assaulted, eliminating a sexual motive. The possibility that Holly knew her killer, police thought, was strong. Close with the family, Tammy couldn't stop worrying about her best friend's sister.
So I went over there, and it was Mary and John and Honey there. And then they came in with the bad news, and I just watched Honey collapse to the floor, and Mary and John grab each other. It was awful. I replay that so much, and I don't know why, but I'm stuck on that replay of that. And when they got the news and the look on their faces, because they didn't believe it. They really didn't think they were going to hear, you know, that she was murdered. It was awful.
Dolly was back in Waxahachie. She and her husband hadn't been there long, much of their possessions still unpacked, and they had yet to get a phone connected at the new residence. Dolly and her then-husband were awakened by the knocks of two Waxahachie police officers. They told Dolly that there was an emergency back in Granbury and that they needed to call the Hood County Sheriff's Office right away.
It was in the middle of the night. We were sound asleep, and somebody came to the door, and two police officers, they said that, we've got an emergency in Granbury, and somebody needs to call the sheriff's department in Granbury. And so I just went and took money and got as much quarters as I could from the clerk and went out to the payphone in front of 7-Eleven, and I'm just shaking. And I finally, you know, got everything put in, and my half-sister, Molly, answered the phone, and she's just like, Dolly, it's not good, it's not good. I'm like, what's happened? What's wrong, you know? And then her husband at the time, he got on the phone, and he goes, Dolly, we've lost Holly. And I'm like, what do you mean you've lost Holly? What? You know, and my eyes are closed, and I'm just trying to, I'm just seeing horrible things in my mind. I'm seeing she had a car crash, and then he said she's been murdered, and I'm just like, what? And I just flipped. I flipped, and I just started screaming. And I was laying on the sidewalk like a darn fool, just screaming and crying, and the phone's just dangling still, and I could hear Sam, Dolly, Dolly, you know. And finally I got myself composed, and I got on the phone, and I'm just bawling, and he just said, how soon can y'all be here? Just give us a little bit of time, we'll be here. And so I got home, and I opened the car door, and I just fell on the ground crying. And I had to get it together because Kristen was little, and we had to get back, and we had to get ourselves here for Mom and Dad. And so we threw clothes in a bag and whatever, and Kristen's like, Mama, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know? And I didn't want to tell her anything. I just remember that drive home, that drive here, and going through the towns at nighttime, and closing my eyes and seeing us when we were little, and going fishing together, and all the stuff that we had ever been through. And then we don't ever anymore. And we got home, we got to Mom and Dad's house, and I swung the door open, and I don't remember. I think there was police cars outside. And I just remember everything being black until I saw Mama. And then we just broke down. And then Dad, he was sitting at the table, and he had his hands together, and he was just shaking his head. Yeah, it was horrible. So I asked Dad, I said, what happened? What happened, you know? He goes, well, I don't have a lot of details. They're really not telling us a lot. And they're saying that she got shot. I said, what? Oh, my God, you know.
According to the death certificate, Holly died of severe blood loss due to an injury to her skull, blunt force trauma. Both Greyhound and Trailways bus companies came in and removed their property from Holly's station, including anything that bore their names, such as signs and stationery. Any buses that were scheduled to stop in Granbury were rerouted to nearby Stephenville, about 30 miles southwest. In the following weeks, law enforcement would give Hood County news reporter and editor Leland DeBusk access to the crime scene and autopsy photos, all of which he wrote about. The scene disturbed Leland. He described the incredible amount of blood splattered on the bus station walls, but the autopsy photos in particular haunted him and kept him up at night. The extent of Holly's injuries, Leland wrote, were so horrifying that, quote, only a savage brute could commit such a horrendous act. Leland wanted badly to describe what he'd seen so that the community could share the rage he felt toward Holly's killer and the doubt he then felt about the morality of man, he said. But he was at a loss for words for the first time in his newspaper career, trying to describe the damage the young woman had sustained.
To say that Holly was brutally beaten to death is only a mild description of how this young woman met her terrible end,
Leland wrote. The family was forced to put Holly's orange Volkswagen Beetle up for sale to help collect funeral funds. As it sat at the Hunter family home, the windshield was broken out of the vehicle. It was presumed to be a gunshot. Funeral services for Holly Palmer were held the afternoon of Thursday, December 1, 1988, at Lake Granbury Christian Temple, with interment in Holly Hills Memorial Park. The Reverend Frank Harris officiated. Law enforcement remained relatively quiet about the details of the investigation. There was a call for action through the press asking for anyone who could account for Holly's movements between 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 26th and 1:45 a.m. on Sunday, November 27th. Police said that someone must have seen her between these times, perhaps at a local store or restaurant. Granbury Police Chief Mitch Galvan said many years later that several hundred dollars was missing from the bus station money box. He reiterated, though, that robbery was still not considered a motive. It was undetermined where the money went and if it even disappeared on that night. Even with all their efforts, the Granbury Police and Hood County Sheriff's Office investigators were coming up empty-handed. But it wasn't because they didn't have suspects. Police eventually told reporters that a total of 6 persons of interest were looked at in the original investigation, with 3 of those being eliminated quickly. 2 others took time to eliminate, and only 1 person of interest ultimately remained. He became the primary suspect for many reasons, including the fact that he'd found Holly dead. And instead of reporting the finding in person at the sheriff's office just 2 doors down from the bus station, he drove home to report it. Holly's boyfriend. That and more on the investigation, next time on Gone Cold. If you have any information about the murder of Holly Palmer, please contact Granbury Police Lieutenant Russell Grizzard at 817-573-2648. We'd like to thank Holly's family, specifically Mary, Dolly, and Wesley, for their support and contributions to this episode. And thanks to Tammy, David, and Beverly for your contributions as well. The Hood County News and TSHAOnline.org were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to become a supporter of Gone Cold, you can do so at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production. And we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.